Hello, I'm Steve, I'm an addict.
Hi Steve!
It's nice to be here. I'm in a band and I'm on the road and my mate Gary gave me some CDs of meetings and they're very handy, you know, because I don't know, I don't get to a lot of meetings on the road. I know it's possible. If I was a really good boy, I'd make an effort. But I don't. And so, I really appreciate these tapes. I don't know what meeting they were from, but they helped a lot, you know. And the good thing about the tapes is you don't know who's speaking, so you can't really judge the person. That's because I'm listening to a few of them and I'm thinking, who's that? You know, who's that? And I have no idea, so you just got to listen to it, you know. You can't judge other than what they're saying, you know. I found out afterwards who they was, because I was curious. I live in Los Angeles, and I've been here about eight weeks now. And I'm here till September, middle of September, early September, before I go back to Los Angeles. I've been living in Los Angeles 26 years, which is actually longer. I've spent more time in Los Angeles than I've spent in England. I'll be 53 in September. I'm 17 years clean. And 18 in October, God willing. I've been around the rooms for about 24 years. Obviously, in that time, I did a lot of relapsing, and it was really only I had like 3 years twice, you know, and I never worked any steps in that whole time, and inevitably it gets too weird not to use, you know. The last time I got loaded actually was my mental bottom. I actually reached the bottom in my head. When I first came to the rooms, it was more of a physical thing. I was tired of breaking in people's houses and stealing, you know. I was sleeping on people's couches who I didn't know, and then they would be silly enough to leave me there while they went to work, and I would nick everything I could out there. And that what I did that for about 4 or 5 months in Los Angeles, and then I ran into a lady who said, "If you come to meetings, you can sleep on my couch," and that seemed like a good deal, you know, because I was in a real desperate space, sleeping on people's couches I didn't really know, and homeless basically. I sold my passport. I had nothing. Absolutely nothing, and the idea of sleeping on someone's couch and not having to have to move, all I had to do was go to the meetings, it sounded like a good deal, and I did that. But like I said, that weren't my physical, that weren't my mental bottom, that was just like, that was just something that I wanted to do, and I liked it, and I liked coming to meetings, and I liked the fact that I felt safe at meetings. I didn't really understand all the dogma and the steps and the talking and all the rest of it. You know, I didn't get it, but I was pretty shut down when I first came to the rooms 24 years ago. You know, I had no concept how to treat people. I had no concept how to assess a feeling. You know, if I was feeling, you know, I had no concept. I didn't have any skills as a child from my mother and my stepfather on how to behave, you know, what the right thing to do was, you know. They were, my mother was very shut down too, and my stepfather was abusive, and I just didn't have any skills whatsoever. But the last time I got loaded, I got myself back on my feet on one of them 3 years that I came back again, not worked any steps. So I got back on my feet. And I was renting a house in Los Angeles, and I had money, and I was working again, doing stuff. And it was the same pattern, you know. I'd go to meetings every day, and I'd slowly stop going to meetings, stop talking to a sponsor. Not that I ever took any direction, and I would slowly like back away, and I would act out sexually. My addiction would go to sex at that point, and I would just try to act out, and I didn't understand. I didn't understand what I was doing until I had a kidney stone, and I went to the doctors, and I had that operation, and they gave me a load of pills, and I was off and running again, a load of Percodans, and I kept going back to the doctor saying I need some more. I'm still in a lot of pain, which I wasn't. It was the addiction had just got a hold of me again. And I was messing about really. I really wanted to do heroin again, you know, and that's what I eventually did. And then I took a hostage, this young girl, got her doing it, you know, and at this point I didn't know anywhere where to really get it. I knew this one guy, this Mexican guy who lived in this one area, which is, it's called the Valley in Los Angeles, and it's very confusing. There's like millions of streets, and it's all crisscross, you know. It's not like, I didn't know my way about, and I didn't know what's going on. I didn't know this guy, but he was my only connection to getting some dope at this point. And when I get loaded, I isolate, and I don't talk to anyone. So people who know me know something's wrong, you know. And so I would be calling this guy up, and he'd say, "Meet me so and so." He'd be all paranoid, and I'd get to this spot, and he wasn't there, and I was shooting so much dope. I think I was like tripping on acid. It felt like, unless it was acid in it, I don't know, but it was just not working. You know, I was doing so much, and it just was not working. And I had the bright idea of stopping by myself and then going back to meetings and not telling anyone again, you know. And you know, that mental thinking is, you know, and I just couldn't do it. I bought a bunch of Quaaludes, if anyone knows what they are. They were like sleeping pills. I don't think they even have them anymore. And these other pills, which was like the equivalent to DF-118, and you know, I was going to do that this night. I was going to do it. It was a Friday night, and I didn't have any more dope, and I started doing that, and I woke up about 3 in the morning and thought, oh no, I can't do it like this. This is ridiculous. And I must have dozed off again, and then woke up in the morning, and I'd sat on the edge of the bed, and I just, that's when it hit me that the game was up, you know. The game was up. It's the first time I've ever felt like that, that it wasn't about dough, and it wasn't about, you know, anything else other than the fact that a light went off in my head and said, I can't do this anymore. And I surrendered right there and then, you know. And I called up someone, and they came and got me, and I went into this rehab in this hospital. and I was in there for like a month again, and but this time it was different. I actually I'd never felt that feeling before, that I'd actually, you know, I always thought there was another one in me, another run in me, but I knew I couldn't do it anymore. So, you know, that's for me. That was my bottom, and I'm so grateful that I had that feeling, and I hope all of you get that, reach a bottom. I mean, I don't want to put anyone off if they haven't reached what they think's a bottom, and then they're going to go out and get loaded. But that was it for me, and it was nothing dramatic. I wasn't hanging off the Empire State Building, King Kong, and like little planes trying to shoot me down. You know, it was nothing dramatic like that. But and then I went in back into the rehab for a month, and then I got another kidney stone, you know. And when I was in there, this doctor, when I was in there for the rehab, this doctor said to me, "Why don't you take this stuff, Trexan? It's an opiate block." And I'm like, "Well, all right, if you want me to, I'm not going to get loaded, but if it'll make you happy, I'll take it." So I took this stuff, and the next day I got this kidney stone again, and I couldn't do nothing. They were shooting morphine in me, and it wasn't doing nothing because I'd had this opiate block, you know. So it really works, that opiate block. And I don't know. I look at it now as like God's will, you know. It really got my attention. It was one of the most horrific things I ever went through without any pain medication. They put that thing up your penis, you know, it's that catheter with like nothing. I passed out, I couldn't handle it. And then they gave me anaesthetic for the kidney stone. I don't know how they do it here, but they put you in a bath and it's like these sound waves and it crushes it, and then you flush it out afterwards. And I remember coming to, having a epileptic fit on the bed, and everything went flying because I had no pain medication, and it was brutal. It was so brutal, and I think that helped a lot, you know. It really got my attention, and I don't know if that's got anything to do with the reason I'm still sober. But that's what happened, and I've been, you know, I've been here 17 years ever since, and I finally got a sponsor, got involved with the steps, like really did, went through all the steps, full step I went through with sponsor and a few other guys just sitting in front of me, making me do it, you know, because I didn't learn nothing at school. I thought, steps remind me of school, it's like a book, and I hated school. I just sat at the back daydreaming in school. I never learnt a thing, and that's what the steps remind me of, you know. Now, there's no pictures in the book. I think they should put pictures in for people like me. But so I did that, and I find in the rooms that I found a lot of humility that I found the painful way to change, you know. And I was still self-absorbed, still selfish, still thinking about what I can get out of situations. This is in sobriety for a long time, you know. Still really twisted in the head in this last time, and still acted out sexually, still acted out in other ways. It's been a hard road. I don't know, because I've never been down this road before. I've never been clean 17 years before. And sometimes it's strange But it's definitely a lot better than it was when I was sleeping on people's couches. And all the other stories that I could bore you with that got me here. It's weird coming back to England. A lot of emotions come up. You know, a lot of my using, and even way before I was using, a lot of emotion comes up from areas. I was brought up in Annesmouth and Shepherd's Bush, and you know, I go around there sometimes, and it's very strange. I'll see a street, and it would totally remind me of something that happened when I was, you know, a situation when I was like 4 or 5. I believe I was an addict. Looking back, when I was in Amherst, I was about 4, 5 maybe, and I was living with my nan, and there was a bunch of us young kids just hanging out, being kids, whatever, and this one little bird pulled her knickers down, and I couldn't stop staring at her, you know, and that. It was like a trigger, you know. It was like, boom, that addict came alive right there and then. All the other kids run off, and I just couldn't stop staring. And that was it. That was way before I did any drugs or alcohol or anything else. You know, that was way before my stepfather was abusive to me. You know, I can't blame. So I believe that, you know, you're born with the I don't know what you call it, but the thing that normal people don't have, you know, the thing that when, you know, I have a drink or I take drugs or whatever, it feels euphoric and it makes me feel all right, you know. So I don't know if it's all. I'm starting to think that it's all the same. You know, it's all the same. Drugs, alcohol, sex, food, whatever. You know, I stop one, it comes out in another area. I stop that one, and it starts here. You know, I've stopped acting out sexually, so I'm eating like a pig. You know. You know, I don't know what the core of it all is. I don't know if the core of it is, maybe I'm a sex addict, and the drugs and the alcohol just help me overcome, you know, take the pain down of that. I don't know. I don't know what the root of it all is. I just know that I prefer to be clean, you know. And work on the other stuff. Eating is a real thing for me, especially being on the road, and it's like a comforting thing, but it's a double-edged sword, because I don't like the way I look being fat, but I can't stop trying to fix the way I'm feeling of being uncomfortable on it, being in a rock and roll band, you know. So I keep saying, well, when I get over this, finish this tour, then I'll lose weight and all that. But it never happens. You know, then I get obsessed with losing weight. You know, I'm reading every little fucking thing on a candy bar. And, you know, I can't just be in the middle. It's impossible for me to be in the middle of anything. It's either up here or down there. And sometimes it's so annoying. Sometimes like, I wish I wasn't an addict, you know, and just be normal. But I know that's never, ever going to happen. I sponsor about five blokes in America. I had an issue with God about a year ago. I started convincing myself that there wasn't a God. And I started believing there was a God on this tour because I started praying a lot to get me through certain situations, and I got through it, and I had God in my conscience again, and I ain't going to doubt it anymore, you know, because definitely when I did pray, I felt better, whether there is a God or not, you know. I choose to believe that there is a God again, and he's looking after me, you know. I'm finding life to be very strange, and it's, you just get one shot and then that's it. And it's definitely a journey, an adventure, if you will. I'm a different person than I was when I first came to the rooms 24 years ago. Completely. I'm not. I still get feared up a lot all the time, and I can get into doom and gloom quite easily. How long have I got left?
10 minutes, mate.
10 minutes.
5 to 10 minutes.
Great. What else? What else? What else? I find London to be a very rough city. You know, living in Los Angeles, you get all like, ugh. And coming back here, it's so in your face, and it's. I like to people watch, you know. Like before I came here, I was at Trafalgar Square, just watching people, you know, watching people hustling and. Watching the tourists and watching the hustlers, looking at the tourists and this whole routine going on. That's one good thing about sobriety. You really have wits about you. You kind of know what's going on. I do, personally. I was very naive when I got to these rooms. I have a weird relationship with my mother. I left home when I was like 14, 15, somewhere in that ballpark. And I'm not very close to my mother. And I'm making an effort to see her. I don't like going over to see her. It's uncomfortable. She lives alone now. And I realise I get a lot of... From being a child, I've gotten a lot of bits of my character is definitely from her, watching her grow up when she had me, when she was 20, you know. And I'm completely a different person than that person was. And I don't know, she's getting old, and I know at some point down the road or whenever, you know, I'm going to be the one probably to have to look after her, and I don't want to do it, you know, because I don't really know her, and she's my mother, I know, but, you know, she did the best she could, she really did, I believe that, and I had a horrible stepfather. It was very abusive, and she always sided with him, which I have a resentment against to this day, and I haven't really cleaned that up, you know. So I don't want to get involved, I met my real father last time I was here 6 years ago. He lived in Nottingham. I never met him before, and I tracked him down. That was cool. I enjoyed that. But I can see why he left my mother, you know. He seemed like sensible, you know what I mean? And I went to the pie and mash shop with my mum about a month ago. She lives in Putney, and we went to Tooting on the bus. And it was, oh God. It was a nightmare. I had to splash out and get a cab back. I couldn't handle it. I have no children. I find it very hard to have a relationship with women and men, you know. I can only be around someone for so long, and then I have to, like, go home by myself and get a breather. I don't know what that's about. Well, I do know what it's about. I think. I don't. I always go to this one thing, but it was a number of things, you know. I'm just, I've always been a loner, even when I was so really young. I was always alone. You know, I told you about that one thing with the little bird who was four. And I would go peeping Tom in when I was like 6 and 7, looking through people's houses and looking over public lavatories with a mirror, you know. And I was obsessed with that. You know, this is way before drugs and alcohol. And I don't know where it all come from. It's strange. And I like attention, and I don't get any attention anymore, you know, because I'm fat. And like in London, you see everybody because you're walking everywhere. In Los Angeles, you see no one, everyone's in a car, you don't even know anyone who lives anywhere. But here, you see everyone, and no birds ever look at me, and I get the ump, you know. I used to get loads of birds when I was younger, when I was in when my band I was in first started, and it's only been in the last 10 years since I was 40 it kind of stopped, and it gives me the ump, you know, and I get angry, and it's all about, a lot of it for me was about attention, you know, from everyone, low self esteem, big ego, you know, not out of control ego, but big enough where I'm thinking about myself all the time, you know, but totally no self-esteem whatsoever, didn't think anything of myself, you know, I've turned a lot of that around where it's like I don't give power to other people, I don't let other people dictate how I'm going to feel anymore. You know what I mean? That's happening. It's not happening enough as much as I'd like it to be, but you know, coming to the meetings is the longest, most consistent thing I've ever done, and it's a miracle. You know, it's a miracle that I still enjoy and want to come to meetings, you know. I've seen a lot of people drift off over the years. I've been coming to meetings, get loaded, commit suicide. They have a horrendous relapses after many years. And it really, well it is, it ain't about how many years you've got, it's really what work you're doing here. That is what I look at with people I choose to hang out with. I know a lot of people with 20 years who I don't want nothing to do with, you know, and it's about really keep doing it. You can't cruise in here, there's no such thing as cruising, and I have to keep working it, and sometimes it gets painful, sometimes I don't want to do it, stuff, you know. You know, I don't know what's around the corner, you know, other than I've been okay up to now, you know, I've been looked after up to now. My life is a million times better than it's ever been. I've still got issues, I probably always will. Maybe, you know, certain things will change for me down the road. I don't know. But as long as I keep coming to meetings and telling you how I really feel and not just make out everything's okay and then want to go home and slit my wrist, I'm okay, you know. I've got no problem being honest with people. I've never really had that problem, thank God. Yeah. Is that it?
That's it.
Thank you very much.